Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the On Air podcast. We've had a little bit of time off. I just want to say initially, before we sort of kick off into the actual topic of discussion today, I just want to say a quick thank you to everybody who has sent us really lovely reviews on our last few episodes, particularly episode 92, which is where we talked about the conspiracy theories around Prince William and Kate and what's going on with their health and things like that. And obviously, we are going to be talking about the health stuff again today, but I just wanted to thank people for all the lovely things that they've said about that episode, because we've had a lot of really nice reviews. I just wanted to say thank you, and if you have enjoyed any of our episodes in recent weeks, please do rate us 5 stars on any podcast platforms you use. So yes, obviously for this actual episode today, we are going to be talking about, I don't think there's anything else we could really be talking about at the moment, which is the latest health update around the Princess of Wales. I mean, I imagine most people have been paying attention to what's been going on, because this is the, you know, the biggest story. But I also think that, you know, it's kind of like, this will only apply to British people, but I was going to say it's like watching something on Dave. So in the UK, there's a channel called Dave, which pretty much exclusively plays comedy shows that are repeats from other channels. And so you'll be watching like a topical panel show 8, 9, 10 years after it was originally aired. You're like, who? I don't even remember who that person they're talking about was or what happened. So if, you know, there's the possibility that somebody will be listening to this in 100 years and have no idea what we're talking about. So we could do a bit of a recap. We've talked about Kate's health in a couple of previous episodes. So episode 88, we talked about the initial news in January that she was having surgery. Episode 92, as I mentioned a minute ago. Then we talked about the Norwegian royal family, and we took a week off. And in that sort of 2-week span, the conspiracy theories we discussed in episode 92 became much more intense and much more toxic. When we talked about it in that episode, it was kind of maybe a 50-50 split between like jokes and memes and kind of genuine conspiracy theories. And I think the change really was that in the 2 weeks or so before, it started to become, the balance started to shift, and it started to become lots of conspiracy theories that had spiraled, particularly in the US. Almost, it was almost like acceptable in certain places.
Yeah, I think we recorded our last episode on the 10th, which was Mother's Day for us in the UK, after the Mother's Day photo had been released, but before the kind of mania surrounding it kicked off.
I mean, I'm quite glad in a way that we weren't recording. But whether you, regardless of what people think about the actual Mother's Day photograph situation, after that, it kind of, it suddenly became like acceptable for mainstream news sources to be like, not necessarily backing it, but almost like giving it a legitimate platform of like being an equal and valid point of view that we have to consider. And it led to the point where, you know, it's sort of in amongst this, we had news that at least one member of staff, I mean, some of the press have said 3 members of staff, but we don't know precisely, tried to illegally access Kate's medical records at her hospital, which is a crime. So it was really reaching a point where like, it felt like these conspiracy theories were actually having a real consequence beyond just horrible things on the internet. That this is kind of what the environment felt like before we got the latest piece of news.
I mean, obviously, quite famously, back in 2012, there was the horrible incident where some American radio DJs... Australian radio DJs.
Don't want the Americans to come for us. I know you didn't do it. I'm sorry.
Yes, yeah, from Hot 30 Countdown, contacted the hospital where Kate was staying when she was pregnant with George in the very sort of early stages. And one of the nurses, Kate, Jacintha Saldana, ended up sort of taking her own life as a result of it. And that did get huge coverage. And obviously that was somewhat because of the sort of horrible outcome, the loss of someone's life over this kind of intrusion into a royal's privacy. And obviously no one intended that to ever happen. That was a horrible sort of side effect. But less than sort of, well, no, like 12 years later, a very sort of similar thing happened, except rather than it being done for, you know, it was essentially the original prank, so to speak, was done for fun. It was to get a bit of a story for the radio. This supposed alleged hacking came from medical professionals in the hospital, and I've read a few sort of analyses of it from people like, you know, from Forbes and things like that, who've said like, well, if the Princess of Wales's medical records are being hacked, well, then that means anyone's medical records can be hacked. And there's been no outrage because people were so focused on this kind of these conspiracy theories, this very much as fake news angle, where there was a genuine meaty story people could be getting into.
It's difficult because we don't know exactly how many people, we don't know when they accessed the medical records, we don't know how the conspiracies actually played into this, but nobody tried to access Charles's medical records.
Yeah, it kind of was followed by lots of people, probably with no information from this hacking, then being like, oh, I definitely know what happened, and sort of using this hacking as an opportunity to promote their own conspiracy theories. So I think in the sort of immediate fallout of the news that there was a hacking, there was a real increase in different people giving different definite things that Catherine had been in hospital for. And I think that's where the kind of, you could really see the impact, because I mean, it's very unlikely any of them had access to those hacked medical records, but there was a slight added legitimacy to it.
Definitely. And I think the other thing that sort of was developing alongside this was, you know, a lot of Kate fans were obviously very defensive from the beginning, and I'm not saying that's wrong or right or anything. It's just they responded in a certain way. But I feel like it started to really ramp up the people who support Kate kind of coming out and saying, you should speak, you should step up, you should do this, you should do that, you should hit back at the conspiracy theorists, fire her entire PR team and all of that sort of stuff. And so even people who like Kate and support Kate were coming out and kind of, I don't think this is necessarily their intention, but like criticizing her for choosing to be private. They were asking for her to say things that also the conspiracy theorists were asking for her to do. I was sort of thinking, well, it will die down because it always does. Like, this won't be talking about this in 25 years, but it doesn't seem to be dying down quite as quickly as I might have expected.
Yeah, I mean, before she spoke, it definitely felt to me like the amount of pressure that was on her to come back, that kind of, I felt like her first engagement back, which I had, you know, which we had expected to be in April, was going to be the most pressurized situation of all time. I would have just not done it. I'd be like, I'm done now. I can't physically enter public again, because, you know, I think we saw with the video footage of her, and then there were so many people being like, I've analysed the height of her using my analysis data, and she's actually 3 inches shorter than she normally is, therefore it's fake. And I was like, that is the type of thing that if you're doing it on video footage with, when we have metadata, knowing when it was recorded, it's never good. That doesn't end. I felt like with you, I didn't think this was going to be sort of carrying on forever, but I felt the sort of level of conspiracy theories had got to a point where that was never going to fully die down again. It would always be higher than it should have been.
I remember years and years ago, they went to a cathedral, I think Coventry. There were children there who were on a school trip, because that's what children do all the time, go to local sites of interest on school trips. And so they stood around outside and waved flags and said hi to Kate. And I think William as well, I think he was there. And then there were people who were like, the children were shipped in by, they were bussed in by Kensington Palace to pretend that people are interested in Kate and William, but nobody actually really is. And then I remember, like, it was so funny seeing people on our Twitter arguing with a cathedral's Twitter account, because they were like, no, it was a school trip. No matter what she'd done, they would have been like, that child was a paid actor. Like, okay, sure. all right.
So on the 22nd of March at 6 p.m, Kensington Palace released a 2-minute and 20-second video of Kate just talking. And in that video, she thanked everyone for their support and said that after the major abdominal surgery she had had in January, which at the time was thought to be non-cancerous, further tests had found that cancer was present and she now needed to undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy. And then throughout the rest of the statement, she spoke about things like it had taken her time to come to terms with. They had to inform George, Charlotte and Louis about what had happened in a way that was sort of appropriate for them. She'd had to recover from her original surgery to be able to start the treatment. And then she kind of, she did a bit of saying, I'm okay, I'm well, I'm doing well. I've got William with me, we're all good. And she kind of ended with saying, give us privacy. And one day I'll be back at work, but not yet, so go away. In the nicest possible way.
We know as well that the video was recorded on the 20th by BBC Studios, who are a production arm of the BBC. So are you okay to talk about how you found out about this?
I am okay to talk about it.
Okay.
So I'm going to set the scene and say that I'd had a really lovely day at work. And I even left work early. I was going, you know what, Grace, go home early.
Wow.
We've had a busy week at work. And I thought, you know what, I will. I'm going to go home at 4:30 instead of 6. So I got home. And my mum and dad were watching Pointless, which is a quiz show on the BBC.
Amazing.
And I was, you know, scrolling through social media. And I saw some gossip social media sites come up on my sort of my Twitter timeline or my Instagram timeline being like, that big royal announcement is happening today. And my initial reaction was, yeah, right. Because there have been a lot of big royal announcements that are definitely happening today over the last sort of 2 weeks. But then there were three gossip websites that caught my eye. So TMZ posted at 5:08 that there was going to be an announcement on Kate's health. Dumois at 5:09 posted there was a major royal announcement coming. And then TV Zone at 5:22 said there was definitely going to be a royal announcement at 6 p.m. And I don't follow any of those people, but they all had come across my account. So I went to Tumblr, because obviously that's what a girl does when she sees this going to be a major royal news story. And I sweep in like, this is a real story. This is it. And yeah, I quickly found out what the news story was and I think I actually went to shock. I was quite shaky. But yeah, until I saw it at 6 p.m. on BBC, I did not 100% believe it. But I did. I knew in my gut. And I was like, is this like real cancer? Or is it like she's had cancer and she's recovered? Is it the bad type of cancer? Like, what is this? What do they mean by cancer? Yeah. So I was going through many emotions. And I was thinking, oh, this is all my fault. Because when Charles got cancer, the first thing I thought my mum said was Kate had. And I was like, oh, thank God. At least it's not Kate. I was like, I've done this again.
Your powers.
But yeah, I was going through a full emotional roller coaster at that stage in my life. But I do think at the time, looking back now, I was just in pure shock, because it very much did not hit me until I woke up like Saturday morning. I was like, oh my God, that happened.
I think I woke up from my nap at like 5 and then did some bits and pieces and wasn't really paying attention to my phone or social media or anything like that. I think I checked my phone about 5:30. I hate when people do this and they're like, oh, I'm so close to the royals. I have so much inside information. I don't have any inside information, but I did know exactly what the statement said and had seen it 30 minutes before it went out.
I got it at 5:30. That's when I saw the statement.
Yeah, mine must have been a few minutes after you. I think I got it after you. Yeah, I think that's just the benefit, to be honest, of being a royal watcher for 900 years, is that you start to know people who know people who know people who are on the press distribution list, and so you find out the information in advance. But we both of us had seen the actual statement, but I was exactly the same as you. I don't believe something until I've seen it for myself. So I was sort of like hoping in part that it was fake and that it wasn't coming and that it would be 6 o'clock and everything would be fine. And I kept like staring at the Kensington Palace social media account and refreshing it over and over again, even though I knew it was going to be at 6 o'clock. So I was like, why am I refreshing it at 1:45? It's not going to be out yet. And just, you know, at 6 o'clock on the dot, refresh the page, and there it was. And so obviously, because I knew what the statement said, all I saw was the video, the sort of the thumbnail of her. And I was like, oh, okay, it's real. And I think my stomach sort of dropped. But it was more because I'd spent 25 minutes sitting there thinking, is this real? Is it not real? I can't really do anything else until I know what's going on. That was what made my stomach kind of go, oh, it's real. But I'd had that little bit of time to prepare. So I would be really interested in like people who had no idea this was going on and just were just watching the TV and then it cut away to the news saying this, like how that must have been.
Yeah, I can't even ask my mum, because I did tell her. I was like, we can't turn over to Richard Osman's House of Games, mum, because there's some news coming and we need to find out that Kate's got cancer. But it was that like 3-minute period between the end of Pointless and the start of the news. I remember saying it was like the worst great Kate wait we've ever done because there wasn't going to be a baby at the end.
Yeah.
Like even in the best circumstances, they were not going to announce a baby. So it was like, I like you said, I couldn't do anything. It was a bit like when the Queen was dying and we all knew she was going to die. And I got home from work quickly that day and I sat on the sofa and I was like, and I was, you know, refreshing social media and it had come up on social media before it's on the news. And I was going, Mom, the Queen's dead. And she's going, what's not on the news? I was like, but it's on Buckingham Palace's Twitter. So it felt a bit like that. I was like, well, I've seen it. So I know it's coming in my heart. I know it's on its way. But there's that little sort of, I don't know, like that kind of twilight time between the end of Pointless and the start of the news. I was like, God, oh God, this is the worst 3 minutes of my life. And it's also because I'd read the statement, but obviously with the statement, they sort of give little sort of tidbits out to the press. And I was like, that was what I was waiting for because I didn't know that. And I didn't know whether they were going to be like, oh, secretly they've said it's very aggressive or anything like that. I just knew the basics.
I think the first thing that hit me about it was, this is going to sound so cheesy and it's really not like me to be this sincere, but I hadn't realised how much I missed Kate's voice. I was fine with the statement they gave us in January, but I think for me, it was like, we've spent the last 2 months or so having a lot of other people speaking for Kate or pretending to speak for Kate. You know, she's never been very good at public speaking, but I mean, she did a fantastic job. Obviously, but I think, like, watching it as well, like, again, before I picked, because I already knew what it said, I was like looking at the whole environment of it, and it's just like you could just like see how nervous she was, of like she was sort of twisting her hands and sort of fiddling and fidgeting a little bit. It definitely felt like it was serious and it had a weight to it, like she wasn't grinning away, but also sort of kind of reassuring. It was very like maternal almost. Is that a silly thing to say? I don't know.
No, it was definitely maternal. It felt like she said in the speech that she'd had to sort of tell her children. Mm-hmm. And then she said something like, and like I told them, I'm telling you, I am well. And it felt that kind of like, to my other children, the entire of the world, they'll tell you. But that's definitely what it felt like. She was like, okay, I've spoken to my real children and now the naughty ones in the corner, I tell them as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so like, I think, I'm just always impressed when people, you know, are doing things that they naturally are not very comfortable with. Even if she was just doing it for any random thing, she would have been uncomfortable sitting and doing a direct-to-camera kind of thing. But to be able to kind of move past those obvious nerves and deliver something that felt so sort of real and natural, but not sort of overly informal or overly flippant, or you know, it felt like her delivery just struck a really lovely tone.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think because she was so nervous, it came across really natural. Like, it didn't come across as if she'd practiced it 87 times and was just reciting it. It felt like, you know, she was just talking, even though it had clearly been written out and she checked it and thought, yeah, I'm happy with that. It felt like she was just having like an informal chat to tell you the news, which was, you know, it felt like Kate in a way that, you know, obviously the other press statements didn't come from her, but they feel like they come from the palace. This felt more personal. In a weird way, it was very reminiscent of the engagement interview when they were both sort of sat down and it was a conversation between William and Kate and Tom Bradley. Like, it felt that same kind of, they were sat down, we were sat down, having a chat.
Yeah, so kind of done a little bit of analysis of like the background and what happened. So let's look at the statement itself. Most statements will have like a purpose as to why they're being given. And I think in terms of like statements like this from royals and things, usually there's sort of one of two kind of purposes. So one is just the quite basic one of informing people about facts. And then there's the other angle, which is kind of like trying to encourage people to think or act in a certain way based on what you've said. I'm going to talk about the first one, which is the sort of informing people. And I would just like people to hear me out. Because once I get to the end of all of this, I think it will make sense. But I know that people are very sensitive at the moment. And so just, I would, this is the whole point of having a podcast, is that it's not like 100 and however many characters. We're not limited. We can have this sort of expansive discussion. So just listen to what I say for the next bit of time, and hopefully it will all be fine. I don't think it, the statement itself did a great job of informing people.
I mean, I would agree.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't, to be like more dramatic.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, when there was a silence for a moment, I was like, she's going to disagree with me. This is going to be the moment. No, I think it's not a criticism of anybody. And as I say, once you hear me out fully, you will understand where I'm coming from. But I think you have to remember what we said earlier about like how we experienced the video. We read the statement first, kind of divorced of context, no, not delivery from Kate, not Kate's voice. So I'd read that statement several times, just as a written statement with no sort of personal touch or no delivery from Kate or nothing like that. You know, despite the fact that some people, for some reason, have really heavily criticized it, I actually think the first statement in January was great. And we talked about that in episode 88, because it obviously it didn't tell you what kind of surgery she'd had, which is the big thing that people were upset about, but she was, if she didn't want to tell us that, she wasn't going to tell us that. That was that. But they told us, you know, she's had the surgery, she's going to be in the hospital for this length of time. She's going to be off work for this length of time. We are not going to provide you with any future updates until or unless something dramatic changes. That's our stand. And it was so clear. So I think that the question, when people were saying things like, oh, that first statement was terrible, it was because they wanted to know what the abdominal surgery was, basically. That's what it, you know, because that was the only thing that wasn't included. Whereas Charles obviously did his statement where he told you that specifically his prostate, but then told you absolutely nothing else of value. So it was a complete opposite, really. And I think that in this statement, when I first saw it, it didn't clear up any questions people had had from the first procedure, but instead introduced a new thing that had loads of questions attached to it. So I was sort of, when I was first processing it, I was thinking like, so it hasn't addressed any of the issues from that people have had, but just adds a bunch of new ones onto it. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily the most sensible thing. But when I was reading it, I was like, okay, well, does that mean, you know, it didn't have anything about like, when is she coming back? Does this mean that she's not going to be coming back along the agreed timeline? I don't know anything about chemotherapy, so I don't know how long it takes or what you can do with it. Will they didn't tell you whether or not they're going to give us more updates from, you know, after this statement, like they did the first time around. So can we expect weekly updates? Can we, or is it the same situation where they're not going to tell us anything unless anything major happens? And I think the big thing that confused me as somebody who's not a biologist or a doctor or a scientist or anything like that was, does she have cancer?
Oh, I'm so glad you said that because I thought it was just me being a bit of an idiot.
This statement said that they hadn't believed it was cancerous, and then they'd found that cancer had been present after the surgery, and then she was having preventative chemotherapy. And all of the press seemed to go with Kate's got cancer, and the public were like, Kate's got cancer, Kate's got cancer. But preventative means before, or like you don't have cancer. You can't have preventative chemotherapy if you have cancer, surely. So I was like reading it and I was so confused about what. And then I think also because they didn't tell us what the first surgery was, I was like, okay, so did they like take out something? Like, did she have some sort of transplant that they didn't tell us about? And the cells in the organ that they took out were cancerous? Or is the thing that she was getting surgery on still in her body and there's still cancer? You know, so it was just like when I first read it, I felt like it just added loads of more questions on and wasn't as good at the actual information as that first statement.
Yeah, I read it. I noticed they said major abdominal surgery, which they'd never actually said before. But like you said, there was part of it where it spoke about how the medical team had told her that she needed a course of preventative chemotherapy, And then later on, it said she needed to recover from the surgery she'd had in order to have the preventative chemotherapy, which she'd now started. I was like, but does that mean she's literally started it that very week? Because if so, if she's had cancer in her body for 3 months and not had surgery, like treatment, in my head, that was really bad.
Yeah.
Just from the statement, I didn't know. And my initial thought was she had not had that the treatment for the cancer until, you know, March 20th. And that worried me. I came out of reading the statement quite concerned, which is why I was so desperate to hear like all the other bits, because just reading it, I was like, panicking.
That was the biggest thing for me. It's like the first statement in January told us everything we needed to know, and the additional detail was just sort of clarification of points that maybe, you know, like when they, you know, people would go, do you really mean you're not going to give another update? And they would go, yes, we do mean that. Whereas this time around, all the detail, all the important stuff really was in the stuff that the Kensington Palace told the press separately. But they did confirm a lot of this stuff of like her, she's not going to be coming back in the original time frame that we'd expected. They're going to continue to not sort of provide regular updates. But I think that a really good statement in terms of the informing part, you shouldn't have to do all of that. It has taken extra research on my part to understand what I think is probably going on, because I don't have a medical background. It's important to do research when you're trying to build an opinion or an argument or anything like that. But if you're just trying to understand a statement that's been released, you shouldn't have to do all of that extra legwork yourself. But my understanding is preventative chemo, what it sounds like with Kate is that they're trying to prevent cancer in somebody who already had cancer. So it sounds to me like they found cancerous cells and they don't know if they're like still lingering in the body. They don't know if there's the possibility that cancer will happen somewhere else in the body because she's already had it. So it's sort of like a precaution. And actually once I felt much better once I read some of the articles, because there was one report that was like, a lot of the time people who get preventative chemotherapy are already cured the whole time they're getting chemotherapy. It's just like, it's done as a matter of caution. But I still don't really 100% know if I'm right.
It's not that I needed Kate in particular to be sat on that bench giving me her detailed medical history. I didn't need her to sit there and say it. Mm-hmm. But I think within the press release, there wasn't even, like on some press releases, you get the statement from the Royal, and then underneath that you get sort of notes for editors, which is the explanation. I imagine Kate didn't want to sit on a bench and say, so what I've had is abdominal cancer and mm-hmm. there's 3 cells they spotted in the cylinder. So I'm having chemotherapy to stop me coming back.
Yeah.
And I understand her not wanting to say that, but it should have been somewhere in the official press release. So when I'm going to say the BBC or whichever media outlet reported on it, they could say Kensington Palace, you know, have clarified that she has cancer or she had cancer and is now receiving preventative chemotherapy. But that detail wasn't anywhere. And I think they were, after 2 months of having, you know, the public turn on them in quite a horrible way, Kensington Palace were really relying on the public hearing the word cancer and going, oh, okay.
Yeah. Which, to be frank, it kind of did.
Yeah, they judged that really well.
Yeah, they did. They did. They made a good judgment there. I think this is the important thing to say, because what I'm saying right now is really about the content of the words, the statement itself, as a mechanism for informing people. I don't think it necessarily did a fantastic job. And normally that would really, really bother me, because I think that's important. You know, like I complain all the time about their social media captions emphasizing informality over information. That was snappy, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's a good line.
However, and this is where I'm hoping people come back if they're really angry about this, I also kind of don't really care that it wasn't very informative. And I think as soon as I watched the video, I was like, oh, okay, this isn't about giving us information, really. This was somebody sharing their experience because they know a lot of people care about them. A lot of people are interested in them. They're a public figure. It's kind of like a tale of two halves, I guess. Like I do feel like they should, as you're right, they should have had those notes to editors that clarified some of the points of view or some of the things that they put forward, because I wasn't sure. But the purpose of like persuading people or trying to change people's perspective and the video element of it, like I think it was a resounding success.
And the video message itself, I think after watching it and thinking about it, it reminded me of 2 video messages from the Queen. And the first one was the COVID speech she did, when she ended it with, like, we will meet again. Kate ended this one with, like, you are not alone. And it gave that kind of...
You are not... Sorry, I don't know why I always take the opportunity to sing. No one asked me to.
It kind of reminded me that, you know, of that it was personal at the beginning. Like, I've suffered, like, when the Queen did, like, I've obviously suffered. And then it ended with a message for other people, that kind of, we will meet again, we'll be back together sooner. In this one, like, if you have cancer, you're not alone, don't lose hope. That was the one that immediately I went, that's what it reminds me of. Yeah. But thinking about it more, and in the context of what the narrative around Kate was before the announcement and what it is now, it reminded me, and I say reminded me because I was a baby when this happened, of the speech the Queen gave after Diana died.
That's because, a great comparison.
I think, you know, before she gave that speech, it was anger that the Queen, you know, that Diana died, that the Queen hadn't made a statement, that they were, the royal family were hiding. And then she gave the speech and everyone went, oh, okay. Oh, isn't the Queen nice? And I think the same thing happened, that the social media and mainstream media sort of furor over where she was had got to the point where it was the fact she could be, you know, dead was a joke.
Yeah.
Then almost immediately the reaction went, oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that.
I think other people who were in that situation might have gone, understandably, with a woe is me, my life is so hard, people have been so mean to me. And she could have rightfully done that because they have been horrible to her and it's not called for at all. And she was angry, then that's, she has every right to be. You know, if it was me, it would have been like, my children came home from school and said that they'd heard all these things about me, that that daddy's killed mummy. And, you know, like, I would have been piling it on thing, making people feel sorry for me and like the impact of the conspiracy theories. But she didn't do that at all. Like, it came across as so mature, much more mature than I am. There was like subtle hints at the conversation rather than addressing it head on. So like explicitly saying it's been wonderful to have William's support was kind of like a hint, a knock at the people saying that William was to blame for something. I don't know, you know, but she didn't actually say, William and I are very much in love, will you please shut up? Or like, you know, it's been difficult to explain this to my children in a way that's appropriate, rather than saying the things that you say end up in the playground and my children hear them. She was sort of reframing it. So I thought it came across as just like a very, very like mature and grown up statement. People, when they're told like you should feel guilty or you should feel bad about the thing that you've done, a lot of people are like, no, I shouldn't, because they feel that shame more intensely and they want to bury it by sort of being indignant about things. Whereas I feel like if somebody's much more subtle about it, then you kind of naturally on your own come to a point where you're like, oh no, I feel really guilty about this thing that I've done.
Yeah, it felt like a kind of really gentle telling off from like your favorite teacher in school. Like, you've disappointed. It felt like, you know, without her saying, I'm really disappointed in you, that kind of was, you know, within it, it was like, I'm letting you know I'm doing well, however you need to stop, kind of the overall message. And it definitely was that kind of, it's the same, you know, I do it to the kids at school time and go, I am really disappointed in you, and that's the thing that gets them. It's not telling them off, it's not raising my voice, it's that I'm really disappointed. And it was the same sort of vibe, that kind of, and I think that's what people reacted to, because people went, oh we did that. Sorry.
Definitely. Well, yeah, I think we're moving into kind of a section about the reaction to things. And I think one of the ways that you can tell that this statement was effective was the reaction to it, because there was sort of this overwhelming support and positivity towards Kate. And so nobody really seemed to really care much about the details. Kind of like what you said earlier, of like they saw cancer and everything, all of their questions melted away because they're like, this is a bad thing.
I told my mum before the news came out as a little sneaky thing, and she was like, she was like, oh that's really sad. And I could tell it had kind of like, she was a bit shocked and affected. And I like to use my mum as a political gauge and how things are going, because she doesn't particularly,
your mum is middle England.
Yeah, she's middle England, she just roughly tells me how things are going. And I think, you know, her main sort of association with roles is me, so I think she, you know, but that doesn't, you know, affect how she views things. And she was very much like, that's really, really sad, and she's so young and she's got children, and oh haven't people been horrible to her. And, you know, that was her like initial reaction with no prompting from me, so that was my kind of gauge of where it was going to go. And I think that was very much echoed across the country. I think particularly in the UK, more than, you know, as well as across the world, but particularly in the UK, that was the kind of reaction.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So we had like some statements coming out from the major political parties in the UK, from her patronages, from some celebrities and public figures. And there was a couple of sort of moments, like, did you see the photograph from the offices of the Telegraph?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of them all just stood around watching the statement on TV.
Yeah. So the whole staff team pretty much in the newsroom, all standing, watching the same screens, waiting or seeing the statement live as it aired. And, you know, there were photographs of people like hugging in pubs while they were watching it, which I thought, you know, I was surprised by, I guess. I knew people would be sympathetic, and I think there is a general positive feeling around Kate and people would be sad about it, but I didn't expect that of like people hugging in the street and in front of the palace and things like then, you know, there's a lot of like photographs that I think, oh, those are going to be used in history books in the future.
Yeah, it was like people leaving flowers at Windsor Castle.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have been inside, but I'm not dead
I'm not
yet.
Dead yet.
Come on, guys, I'm still here.
I mean, leave me something good. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear.
So I think overwhelmingly the feeling was positive towards Kate. I think the big, you know, sort of topic of discussion really has been kind of about the conspiracy theorists and about their reaction to things. And as we said, sort of hinted at earlier, like there has been some contrition and some sort of apologies from people who joined in and people saying like, oh, I feel bad about what I did.
Not just like Blake Lively did a whole Instagram post where she was like, I made an ill-advised joke and I'm really sorry. You know, a lot of every man on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok have been being like, I got sort of swept up in this. There have been a lot of those kind of righteously angry tweets where people being like, when you were making your jokes, she was telling her children she had cancer. that kind of vibe. And I think, and not, I keep on that, but I feel like predominantly in the UK, there has been this kind of 180 degree flip on
it.
And now people are going, oh, we really did mess up. And there is, I think, not an anger, but there is a kind of like, not to get to call them disappointment, but this, you've let us down, public, by coming up with these conspiracy theories. This isn't what we're about as a nation. That kind of vibe. In a kind of like a some sort of negative jubilee way, where everyone kind of comes together to feel bad about things.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, firstly, I'm not usually a massive fan of this, but I do think some people deserved a little bit of public shaming. So I feel all right about a lot of that. You know what? It's fine by me. But there's a lot of these articles that are coming out that are like, you know, from Glamour magazine or whatever, that are like, don't get it wrong, we did this to Kate Middleton, or we forced Kate Middleton. And I'm like, I did nothing. Don't you speak for yourself, because I did nothing.
I was fine.
Yeah, you did it. You can take responsibility for what you did, but I'm not having any involvement in it. Let's not talk about this like it was a societal thing that everyone was doing. It was not. So that's really actually quite irritated me, because I'm like, I had nothing to do with it. But it does actually, again, it weirdly reminds me of like the Diana reaction, the way that some people responded in the aftermath to Diana's death, of like demanding that her children be wheeled out in front of them, was horrific. And I think there should have been a public reckoning about how terrible people were much earlier. So I suppose it's a good in a way that they're sort of like, they've learned from the past of like, oh no, actually we behaved really badly. And it didn't take them 25 years or however long it was to recognize it this time around. But I do, yeah, I do just want to say like, it wasn't everyone. Leave me out of it, please. Yeah, so that's bothered me slightly, about like that tone of article of like, this is a societal, like, no. But the other sort of strain that has been quite odd is this, well, if the palace had just told us at the start, or that she had cancer, or told us what was going on at the start and had a better statement, then I wouldn't have said it. So it's actually all the palace's fault. The thing that's interesting for me about this whole thing, and you know, I in a way, like if I'm thinking of myself as like a scientist who stands back and looks at people through a magnifying glass, there is something like interesting from like an anthropological perspective to look at this whole situation, because I think if you went up to like the people who have been saying the conspiracy theories about Kate on social media and you said to them, "Oh, what do you think about flat earthers?" They'd be like, "Oh, well, they're insane or they're crazy or they're ridiculous," or they would make jokes about them and laugh about them. And if they said, "What do you think about, QAnon, people who think that Donald Trump is communicating with them through numbers, and that, he's some sort of messiah figure," and they would kind of say, "Oh, well, they're insane as well. They're, completely insane." But then when you say, "Okay, well, what about the conspiracy theories about Kate?" And they're like, "Oh, no, well, my conspiracy is actually the true one, so it's okay that I believe it. All those other conspiracy theories are insane, but my conspiracy theory is actually the real one, so, totally fine that I believe it," which is what all conspiracy theorists think about their theory. We could debate until the cows come home whether or not we think that the original approach from Kensington Palace was good or not, but I actually think it's completely irrelevant because their argument of it was the palace's fault that I did this is just logically, it doesn't make sense logically.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you have, a child or a toddler, you tell them very early on, and I say to my kids all the time, like, you are responsible for your actions. It doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. It doesn't matter if someone is distracting you or chatting to you. If you talk back to them, you also get in trouble. And not that I have to reiterate that message to fully grown adults, but it doesn't matter if Kensington Palace told you that Kate was on a 3-week holiday in the Bahamas and would be back on, when she felt like it, because she couldn't be bothered to do any work, and you all went, "Oh, that's clearly a lie. She must be lying in a hospital bed." You are still the ones that not only came up with the theories or jumped on the bandwagon with the theories, but you then put them out in the world on social media and kept them going. The moment you put it on social media, you have to take responsibility, and not to suddenly go into like mega serious things, but like there are cases where people have been convicted because they've sent messages online and then someone's killed themselves as a result of that. You are guilty because of things you've said on the internet. And it's that lack of self-responsibility, that lack of taking ownership of your own choices, that is something you see in toddlers, is also what we're seeing in adults on social media.
The most important thing for me is ev right, okay, there are 5.3 billion adults with internet access. I checked this. All of those 5.3 billion people with internet access had the same information, except from about 10 people who know Kate personally. So we'll say 5.3 billion people, I'll round up. So yeah, 5.3 billion people had the exact access to exactly the same information. And almost every single human being on Earth managed to not spread conspiracy theories. I don't know exactly how many people were involved, but even if we say it was a few million, that's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the 5.3 billion adults with internet access who could have seen this statement and were. I'm not saying that all 5.3 billion people on Earth have seen the statement, but if they wanted to, they could find it. The amount of people who actually engaged in this conspiracy theory stuff was tiny. There was actually a survey that came out from, I think it was YouGov, not like, when the Daily Mail does their random little polls and they're like, "Look at our results." Okay. Found that 49% of people in the UK hadn't even heard that there were conspiracy theories about Kate. And this was, when once they'd already taken off, social media has this overinflated sense of its own importance. And I think that people think that because everyone they saw on Twitter was talking about this, that means everybody was talking about this. But your behavior, if you were engaging in this, your behavior was aberrant. It was not the norm. It was against the general consensus of most people who saw the statement and moved on with their lives. So if everybody else could get this information and just trust it and be fine and move on, and you couldn't, it is your fault.
Social media is very, it's what's the word? It's like targeted to you. The algorithm is targeted to you. So if you are seeing conspiracy theories about Kate, and if you are responding and coming up with your own conspiracy theories about Kate, then that is all you are going to see. And I think, even before the cancer announcement, I was saying to people, like, when you look at the list of social medias and the most used, like, Twitter's not in the top five.
Yeah. LinkedIn has more users.
Yeah. It's like Facebook and YouTube and WhatsApp. I didn't come across any conspiracy theories on Facebook or on YouTube or on LinkedIn or any of those places. And actually, I'd pretty much weeded them out of TikTok and Twitter by not interacting with them because I was like, well, that's clearly nonsense. So everyone who was like, but I saw them, so everyone was saying them. It's like, they weren't, because I was on Twitter many times a day, and maybe till 5 or 6 across the, since January, 2 months. Unless someone who I followed was sort of being like, oh, look at this weird thing. Like, organically, I only saw a handful. I follow accounts that are linked to royals, and also accounts that are linked to Republicans who would, mm-hmm. who were speaking out about things like this. So it's not like I have this, like, I have this, like, secret social media where I'm nothing to do with the royals and no one can find me. And, you know, there's no way it would come up algorithmically. So it's kind of funny in the, when I was going through it, when people be like, it's all I'm seeing. And I'm like, well, that's on you. Like, my sister, bless her, doesn't watch the news. She doesn't really have social media. And she gets most of the news from me. And she came to me like 3 weeks ago and was like, have you heard that Kate Middleton's had surgery? I was like, I have heard and I have lived through it.
No, you just brought it to my attention for the first time.
And it's like, if she only just found out, and she's my sister, like, it was such a small group of people who decided that it was their social duty to spread these rumours, even if they were true. The only person they were doing was harming 3 children at the centre of it.
Well, this is, I mean, I might delete this because this is going to be a total ramble, but this is the actual interesting thing about conspiracy theories. I've done a lot of research about conspiracy theories lately. They don't have to be false. If you think about, like, the MK Ultra experiments where they, you know, did human experiments on people where they doused them with LSD, like, but it actually happened. It has been confirmed by the government. There are multiple documents that are out. There are people who spoke, you know, it is a real thing. It's the fact that people believe these things when it's oppositional. So there's the official narrative is that it doesn't exist. They're assuming people's intentions. So they're assuming that there's some sort of negative intention rather than just, you know, incompetence or whatever. And crucially, there is no sort of evidence to back it up. It's kind of like alternative medicine. People talk about alternative medicine, but it doesn't actually mean anything because as soon as it's scientifically tested, it's medicine. So if you said standing on your head cures cancer, that would be, you know, an alternative treatment. But then if it's rigorously tested and found that it does cure cancer, then it becomes medicine immediately. The actual substance of what you're doing hasn't changed, but you've tested it and you've got the evidence. And so now it's medicine and it wasn't before. It's similar with conspiracy theories of, like, if they'd come out and said, actually, yes, you're right, Kate's dead, it wouldn't be a conspiracy theory anymore, even though the substance, the content of it hasn't changed. So it's not the fact that, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not what they were saying was true or not. It was the fact that they were advancing it with absolutely no evidence, deliberately assuming some sort of intention from people, assuming that there was a nefarious purpose behind it, and going against the established narrative. That's what makes it a conspiracy theory.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Oh, I think we should keep that in. That's good. Got
it. I can publish the research article that broke this down. That sort of defines the key characteristics of a conspiracy theory. That was very interesting. But anyway, I think the algorithm, again, this is outside of the scope of this podcast, but it is a very bad thing, and I don't know much about it really, but I understand it is bad, and that it encourages certain behaviors from people. However, even within the algorithm, you have agency and you have choice. And it might be much more difficult for lots of different reasons for certain people. But, you know, you make a choice to engage with certain content. You make a choice to contribute to certain content. You make, and then you see more of us. And you can at any point break it, like leave Twitter. Well, I did because I found it difficult. So I left. Filter out words, say that you're not interested in something, take breaks, don't, you know, write something and then go back to it and don't publish it immediately. Like, there's so many different things that you can do and that loads of us did that they didn't. And so I just think it's like, stop blaming other people. You don't even have, this is the thing, you don't even have to be sorry. Like, I don't even expect people to, I hate saying sorry about things. I genuinely don't even expect sorry from people. Because it wasn't even me, like, it doesn't impact me personally. So how, it's not my right to, you know, demand an apology from people. But I think that the decent thing to do is to just shut up.
I think the people that are blaming Kensington Palace are the ones who are making me the most angry. Like, there are still people out there who have looked at that video and created further conspiracy theories. There are still people out there that are so fixated on being right that they are, you know, coming up with things like, well, how was she at that farm shop then? Or
yeah,
or why did Kensington Palace force Kate to make an edited photo and then pretend she edited it? I kind of, to an extent, have to be like, yeah, you just carry on. They are the people that are always going to make the conspiracy theories. You know, they are, you know, and I have to say, and sorry to Americans, a lot of them are American media based to an extent. And I think it's because, you know, in the same way that people in Britain would probably make jokes about Donald Trump, and in a way that possibly people in America, or, you know, American issues in a way that people in America might not, I think it's that cultural disconnect. Because who is Kate Middleton to someone in America apart from an important person from another country? Like, yeah, a famous person.
They see her as a celebrity.
Yeah, that I get it. I understand. And, you know, people will always make conspiracy theories, and they always have. And I can happily, well, not happily, but I see, you know, it coming from, you know, an American media source, whether that is social media or mainstream media. And I can be like, well, it's actually what they think has got nothing to do with what's actually happening in the UK and for Kate and in the British political sphere. Mm-hmm. And they are just going with it now. They are accepting the fact they've made conspiracy theories and they're just sticking with it. Whereas the people that are blaming the palace, who are being like, well, actually, if Kensington Palace had been better in the first place, I would never have done this horrible thing. It just feels, it feels really sort of immature, that kind of like you not even being able to admit they were wrong in any way, or having the decency to sort of go back. I know a lot of people said, yeah, I've had to go and delete my tweets because people are really angry about this bit. It wasn't my fault in the first place.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, if it wasn't your fault, why are you deleting your tweets? Because
yeah, you should be proud.
I think, yeah, there's this cognitive dissonance between what they are saying and what they are doing. And it does come from shame and guilt and not wanting to admit that actually they got swept up in a funny social media storm, and yeah, they maybe took it a bit far. And now when other people have gone, oh, I feel really bad for what I've done, they don't want to admit that they also feel bad for what they did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of minimizing, whether it's the sort of we did this, like making it seem like it was a communal experience that we were all part of when we weren't. 49% of people, as I remind you, were not even aware that there were conspiracy theories. And I doubt that every single one of the 51% who were engaging in them, because I know I wasn't and Grace wasn't. So that's two people right there. my mum wasn't, you know, there you go. So, yeah. So you know, we know that. So there's that's a way to minimize people's guilt and feelings about this. And then there's also the whole sort of blaming somebody else of like, oh, well, it's their fault, actually. And, you know, and I think that's, I have said, I will say this has been the biggest shift for me, because we talked earlier about how, you know, it had been initially sort of mostly jokes and memes, but then the conspiracy theories were there and were, you know, substantial, but they weren't overwhelming. Then it got to a point where like, oh no, actually the conspiracy theorists are kind of dominating the conversation and the jokes and memes are secondary or almost becoming tied to the conspiracy theories. And so that's, it was seen as being like a mainstream acceptable view to have. And I think that the dynamic since this statement has again shifted, because you're right that like that we're not going to stop conspiracy theorists. And I don't think that they actually ever thought that was a possibility. I think they were always going to be conspiracy theorists the second that they announced that she was sick, no matter what they did. But I think that it has again shifted the needle to a place where those conspiracy theorists are now sort of isolated, and it's very difficult for them to sort of gain background, because even if they say something that's right, everything they say is now against a woman with cancer. And that is a really, really hard battle to win.
Yeah. You almost have to have a bit of respect for them for just going with it, because I would not personally like to go up against a woman with cancer, even if I didn't, you know, like them, or I genuinely thought they were tricking the British public. I'd be like, I'm going to let them do it. People listening to this podcast now are thinking, yeah, obviously I know it. But people from 100 years in the future, when they sit down and listen to this episode, you know, might not know how mainstream the conspiracy theories were and quite how cruel they were. And I think they were cruel in a way that I haven't seen for a long time. And they were targeting not just William and Kate in the centre of it, but by extension, their children and other innocent private citizens and their families and their children and doctors and nurses. And it had got to a point where it felt, I don't want to say it felt dangerous, but it felt like something could happen at any moment and I wouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah, well, actually, when the news came out about the hacking at the hospital, we don't know the timeline for that, as I mentioned earlier, but I actually, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, well, I expected something like this. But I thought somebody would try and break in to their home.
Yeah, some kind of like, yeah, someone's going to break in to get real life footage, yeah, or you know, the footage of them at the farm shop was filmed by a man, and then, like, you know, people were doxing the wrong person with the same name because they didn't think he, you know, they're like, he's a filmmaker, and so that's a different person with the same name. But this poor filmmaker who doesn't even live in Britain had, like, his details splashed across the internet because he supposedly faked this footage of two people at a farm shop. I felt incredibly sorry for people who were seeing it and were getting really upset, because it was quite hard to see some of it and not be upset. You know, I saw things that I was like, that is absolutely disgusting, and I will not repeat it, and I don't want to bring any attention to it. But the very sort of idea or the very concept sort of made my blood boil, and I'm very removed from the situation. Like, I'm not the one involved. I am not the one being spoken about. The immediate sort of switch in that after the sort of cancer statement was in a weird way like a relief, because I wasn't relieved that she had cancer, but I was relieved that people had suddenly gone, oh, we need to stop, otherwise we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah, you've actually picked up on something else that has been a big reaction, is like, once you've had this sort of contrition from people and this sort of acceptance of what they did as being wrong, and then you also had people being like, actually no, I didn't do anything wrong, it was all Kensington Palace. The other sort of strain that has now come out of that is like the anger at the conspiracy theorists, because I think a lot of people were very angry about things for a very long time, and now the tides have turned and they can kind of be like, well, okay, I have things to say that I've been bottling up. And so that's kind of happened. Look, I understand. I have been to therapy for mental health related things that substantially involved my difficulties with anger. I am the CEO of anger. If you want somebody who knows anger well, I'm your girl. But I think a big part of it has been this like anger at the idea that they forced Kate to do the video. You forced her to say this. You forced her to do something that she didn't want to do at all. You forced her, you made her do this. And actually my mum, that was not quite in that tone. She was, when I told her about it, she kind of said, oh, well, you know, it's really gross that people forced her into doing this. And I don't know if this will help people who are feeling that kind of anger about it, but that's not the Kate I know. It's strange to say that, because obviously I don't know her, but she's been in the public eye for about 20 odd years. So we've got to know her through her actions and through her statements and through the little snippets of information from other people. And like, this is the woman who, you know, when she was dumped by Prince William, she didn't sit home and cry about it. She got dressed into her hottest outfits and she went out on the town with the biggest smile on her face with all of her friends and just had an amazing time and held her head high. Who when, you know, really invasive photographs of her sunbathing topless are published in the media for everybody to see, and her privacy was violated while she was on tour in another country. You had William, who walked around for the entire day with a face like thunder. It looked like he wanted to punch anyone he saw because he was so angry about it. And you had Kate, the person who'd been violated, smiling and gliding around the place and just having an absolute blast. You would never know anything was wrong at all. And then quietly suing the people responsible and never making a fuss about it, but getting her own back in that way. In 2010, 2011, she kind of seemed to make a choice that she would take her time, learn about her causes before kind of sticking her neck out and launching any projects. And it took like almost a decade for her to actually launch a project. And during that whole time, people were saying she was lazy and vacuous for like almost a decade, but she stuck to it because that's what she wanted to do. And it paid off in the end. I think people think Kate, because Kate's quiet, that she's weak. But everything I have seen from Kate over the last 20 or so years suggests to me that she is anything but weak. If Kate didn't want to tell people about this, really, really didn't want to tell people about this, I don't think she would have.
People like to refer to Kate as having this kind of queen mother,
yeah,
still marshmallow vibe.
Yeah.
And then when it comes down to it, they don't seem to actually believe it, because they view her as being very passive and controlled by the palace, when she actively made a choice to marry into the palace and has been part of the palace for nearly 13 years, and from what we have seen does not particularly let public opinion or courtier opinion sway her from her belief. There is, from everyone, from people who like Kate, from people who are feeling really bad about making up conspiracy theories, and from people who are refusing to accept that they did anything wrong, they're all treating Kate as if she has been forced at gunpoint to sit on that bench and read it out while William went off on a nice holiday and just left her to it. When in reality, it was probably much more like Kate was like, yeah, I'm going to make a statement on a bench. And William was like, please, please don't do that. Please come home. Please don't go outside.
I think the idea that it's this idea that they buckled under the pressure. They waited until the day that their children broke up for school. So they could have done this a few weeks ago, and maybe they would have if they didn't have kids. But they clearly, there was like a deliberate attempt to wait until it was best for their children, and they'd made this choice. It just doesn't make sense to me. She felt like this was the right time. And maybe there was an element of it. I do think that perhaps having like the BBC be the ones to come in and independently film it might have been part of the, just, you know, might have been partly influenced, or maybe they were going to release it later on in March, but they released it slightly earlier. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't influence anything, but I just think this idea that like Kate never wanted to say anything about her health. Like we were already coming up to the point of time where the statement essentially expired, the January statement would expire, and they would have to give us some sort of update. So I feel like this was coming anyway. Regardless, even if there hadn't been any conspiracy theorists, I think we probably would have got something. I don't know. There might have been parts of it that were influenced by the conspiracy theorists. I think, I understand the anger, and there have been moments where I felt that kind of like white hot rage at people. But I think I'm trying not to give people power by letting them think that they pressured her into something she didn't want to do. Because as far as I can see it, like Kate won this. They didn't.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give them the satisfaction of thinking that they did.
Yeah, we know that the cancer diagnosis and the treatment started around the date of Constantine's memorial service when William pulled out, because the palace have obviously briefed the press that. And if that is also when the conspiracy theories sort of rotched up to like, not shut, well, the word is, it just became a lot bigger. And instead of being like sort of whispers, they became shouts. And I think if you were being pressured into it, it would have been incredibly easy for that, the end of that week, that Friday after that, for Kensington Palace to release a written statement to say, sadly, the Princess Wales has been diagnosed with cancer. She is receiving treatment. More statements will come when appropriate. You know, three or four lines, and everyone would have shut up then. And none of the rest of it needed to happen. But they didn't, because, well, I can only imagine, because Kate was like, no, I'm not ready to tell the public. And
the children aren't ready.
Yeah, the choice of it coming out, the children's last day of term, they've now got 3 weeks in privacy away from the playground and the teachers and all their friends who are going to know in a way that they wouldn't normally know if their friend's mummy and daddy had cancer. They made those decisions to give George, Charlotte, Louis, and probably to an extent William some time to get over it after the news had come out. Because if William was out on an engagement tomorrow, people would be going, how's Kate? How's the cancer? How are you feeling? How are the kids coping? And I don't think William would go very well with that. Whereas giving him a bit of time, giving the press time to die down, the press are probably going to see other members of the Wells family, not the Wells, the Windsor family, the royal family, on Easter Sunday, so they can do all their shouting, get out of the system. That will all take the heat off the Wells family. So it's a really appropriate and sensible time for the statement to be announced. They now get privacy, and when William returns to work after the Easter holidays, you know, towards the end of April, for things like, you know, Anzac Day and just normal engagements, then it's not desperation and this kind of top news story. It's, oh, I hope Kate's doing well, rather than, how is she? How do you feel about this?
You know, it's very easy for me to say this because it doesn't directly involve me. I when things directly involve me, I'm an emotional wreck. So, you know, I'm not trying to sound preachy or anything. It's just that I've said a few times, I understand the anger and the rage. And I think if this opens up a general conversation about how easy it is for conspiracy theorists to take, or conspiracy theories to take hold of people, I am very happy to have that conversation because I've done loads of research on it. So really, I think this is something that is a valuable societal conversation to have. But I think if we're specifically just, you know, attacking people on the internet, and, you know, I'm not usually somebody who's sort of like, oh, Kate wouldn't want us to do that, because I make my own decisions regardless of what Kate wants or doesn't want, you know. So I'm not usually one who thinks that way, but I feel like anger is often about something else. It's about frustration and injustice. It's about fear. It's about shame. It's about anxiety. And I feel like a lot of people are sort of displacing their anxiety and fear and frustration into anger. And I just think like Kate didn't ask for your anger. She didn't ask for you to be rageful towards people. It doesn't help her in any way at the moment. I don't know. I don't think that people should just let sit back and let people, as I said earlier, I enjoy a little bit of the public shaming of it. There's a bit of Schadenfreude about that sort of thing. But I do think that some people are very, very, very angry and very, very upset. And I would just say, like, I don't think that that necessarily is helping Kate in any way.
I think also a lot of people, particularly people who like Kate and have sort of missed her, have this kind of displaced guilt because, as someone who really likes Kate and does really miss her, one of my very first thoughts were like, oh no, like that's even longer that I'm not going to see her, or more engaged. Like my head was going, oh, Wimbledon, July, I was fully believing she would be back at Wimbledon. She might not be. She might not be back. She might miss the whole Olympics, which I had a secret hope she would go to.
I had a friend who said something to me like, "Is it bad that I've immediately thought about her hair?"
Oh, I thought that as well. I messaged that to someone. I said, my, I watched her in the on the interview with her hair, interview in the statement with her hair looking great. And I was
Amazing.
like, oh, her hair falls out. They're not shallow thoughts, but they do feel when you're, put it against a backdrop of cancer, like really shallow and selfish. Like she's got cancer and I'm worrying about whether or not she's going to have nice hair at a tennis tournament in July. But I think it's also perfectly natural to have those thoughts because, not to be all parasocial about things, but there is an almost like a one-sided relationship between people with the sort of celebrities and figures that they respect.
It's been 20 years.
Yeah, I've been following her for 20 years and I get, a lot of happiness out of seeing her do work and wearing pretty dresses. That gives me joy. And, I came into this year when we found out that she was off with the end point of Easter and in my head, the end point of May, because I was like, we'll count off April. Of being, oh, she'll be back then, and then we'll have a full year ready to go. And suddenly, like with Charles, there is no end point in sight. People feel bad that they are feeling those thoughts, but they don't quite know how to. So they are sort of projecting those
Yeah.
feelings onto what they can feel bad about. So you can feel bad that, on the weekend that sort of Kate found out she had cancer, people were speculating she was dead, and she probably heard that and felt a bit sad. Like you can feel really angry about that. It's a really natural thing to feel angry about, and it's a lot easier to admit that's why you're angry than think actually I'm a bit feeling sad that her hair might fall out,
Yeah, we talked about this a lot in therapy of like anger plays a sort of evolutionary role of like it allows us to do things that we might not otherwise be able to do. Like, if we're fighting, it's cavemen fighting against another tribe or something, we can inflict physical pain on somebody else if we feel angry at them much more easily than we can without it. So anger is it's an active emotion. It's like shame and guilt are things that you deal with alone and by yourself, and you don't. They're inside you, and they're painful. Anger feels active, like you're doing something, like you're directing something at somebody else. Usually, it's somebody else's fault. It feel in a way, it sort of can feel good in the moment because it's sort of like you feel like you're doing something about the horrible feelings that you have, and it's a very powerful emotion to be able to cover other things. Like it's so important that people have spaces, even if, they don't know Kate personally. They've known her in the public eye for 20 years, and this might bring up other feelings of situations that they've had with family and friends and things. I understand why people are upset, but I think that there needs to be these spaces where people who are upset about things can process their emotions themselves without putting it on to somebody else who is already going through something very difficult. So I don't want her name to kind of be associated with this really nasty spiral of attacking people when really what she wants and what we should do is to just leave it and wait until they tell us something else.
Yeah, so yesterday for us, Saturday for the rest of the world, Kensington Palace released a kind of mini statement where they were like, they're really grateful for all the well wishes. And then they once again said, like, they hope for the privacy that they asked for. And I think, that they keep going for that. And I think the privacy was the thing Kate asked for in the January statement. She asked for it again in the statement when she left hospital. She asked for it again in her video statement. And now they've asked for it again. And I think she's not asking for people not to go and visit her and bring her cupcakes. She's asking for people to stop talking about her and her cancer so her family can come to terms with it. And that's not to say you can't sit there and go, I'm really sad, you know, Kate's got cancer, and to feel bad and talk to your friends and family, or even on social media to be like, oh, isn't it sad? Moving on. That's all okay. But she doesn't want the theories and the when will she be back? What treatment is she having? What type of cancer is it?
Or like people giving hourly statements about how they feel about it in this particular moment.
Yeah, all those kind of things. That's what she's asking people not to do. Coming as someone who's, you know, just done a 2-hour podcast about this.
Well, I'm hoping we don't have to talk about it again for a while. I'm hoping something else happens.
But I think, you know, I think it's very clear that's what they want. So, you know, when Charles got cancer, I compared it to a disappointing wedding, and it's the same vibe. It feels like the build up to a wedding when you got quite a bit of information right at the beginning. And then there's a chance you'll get more information between now and the end point, but you don't know if or when that will happen or what the information will be. And at the end, you're not going to get a wedding. You're just going to get someone going back to work.
Yeah.
But it feels very similar. But I think people need to expect that, because that is all it's going to be. There's not going to be a weekly update saying like, and this week Kate's feeling much better and she's got a weird taste for pickles. You know, that's not going to happen. So that is all we have got for this week. Like I said earlier, please keep giving us 5-star reviews where you can, and let us know what you think about what we've said, if you agree, if you disagree. We are also still looking for ideas for our 100th episode special. We have ideas, but if you come up with a better one, we will steal it.
We will. So,
feel free to just throw them at us. But until we come back, it is goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.